evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. South Sudanese experts say the country should drop capitalist economy.
I, for one, encourage having a developmental state economic system because we cannot apply a capitalist economic system in a developing country.
And COVID-19 patients escape from an isolation center in Bor.
I'm appealing to these people who are tested positive and then they are back there to the community. If you are tested positive, it is good if you need to follow up the instruction of the doctors. So you come back so that you can be tested, and then from that, if you are free, then you can just go back to the community.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese economists say the government of South Sudan should drop the current capitalist economic system and adopt what they call developmental state economic system, which is market-friendly to help the government stabilize and control prices, black market exchange rate, and the flow of currency in and out of the country. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Economics professor Abraham Matoch, who is also vice chancellor at the Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology in Bor, says South Sudan should drop the free market system and adopt a developmental state economic system that is market friendly but also allows the government to control prices, the black market foreign exchange rate, and the flow of currency in South Sudan.
There's no room a new country wishing to construct, rehabilitate, and reconstruct to move immediately into free market economic level, which is more or less a capitalist. And therefore, I, for one, encourage having a developmental state economic system because we cannot apply a capitalist economic system in a developing country.
A developmental state economic system is a system under which the state has more independent political power and more control over the economy. It embodies strong state intervention as well as extensive regulation and planning. Matoch says adopting such a system would help the government intervene and stabilize exchange rates and control prices in the country. He says capitalism creates a class of the rich who are few and a class of the poor who are many. He says it also creates high unemployment because foreign investors are reluctant to invest in a country with uncertain exchange rates. Matoch says South Sudan's economy is still developing, and that's why speculators are able to manipulate the foreign exchange rates to their advantage. Although the central bank has regulations in place, those regulations are not followed, he says.
If the commercial banks and the forex go and abuse the exchange rate to keep bulk of the money or the dollars with them for black marketing, that will affect the economy. And this is exactly what has actually happened. So people put it for likely that it is an inflation, but it is not inflation.
Professor Matoch says the activities of commercial banks is not the only factor affecting the country's economy. Since international NGOs and UN agencies pay their employees in dollars, he says it inflates the market and weakens the South Sudanese pound against the dollar.
The international bodies are a part of it, whether they are international NGOs or UN agents, because they don't open accounts with the central bank and they keep their money abroad, either in Kenya or Uganda, and they bring it in suitcases when it is time to pay their staff.
A week ago, President Salva Kiir fired Finance Minister Salvatore Garang, Acting Commissioner of the National Revenue Authority Erijok Bulin, and Head of the Nile Petroleum Corporation Choldeng Thon Abel. But Ahmed Morjan, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says the country's economic problems are political, not economic.
An economy that produces almost goods and services needs to have proper peace and security, whereby people will begin to produce import substitution goods and we lessen dependence on imports. And if this is done, we expect the country at least to have proper reserves from the oil money that comes in, the reserves of hard currency. But this has never happened, and people are not able to produce, whether for themselves or surpluses for export.
Morjan says one of many tasks facing new finance minister Athian Ding Athien and his administration is to reduce rampant government corruption in the country.
Administratively, if they can work to lessen corruption, there should be some little improvement internally, especially now that government sometimes is not able to pay its workers wages and salaries for the employees. What the new minister could do would be at least to fight corruption, reduce corruption so that the annual revenue, part of it, can be used prudently to settle internal government obligations.
Morjan says even though President Kiir has fired 8 finance ministers, the country's economic problems are far from over. He says the government must enact procedures to minimize corruption, improve security, and maintain peace. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
An official at the Swiss Cooperation Office and Consular Agency in South Sudan says her country is working with various South Sudanese stakeholders on issues of dialogue, trust building and reconciliation across the country. Joanne Holge is an advisor at the Directorate of Political Affairs at the Swiss Cooperation Office in Juba. She says her government has a long history of working with South Sudanese.
We also had a quite well-known program here that was called the House of Nationalities, which later became the Coalition of Traditional Authority Leaders. And this project aimed at ensuring unity in diversity and was supporting the South Sudanese authorities in working towards the creation of a forum for traditional leaders as part of a viable local government system.
Holger says, after the signing of the revitalized peace agreement in 2018, her government has focused on projects supporting spaces for dialogue, reconciliation and trust building. The Swiss diplomat says her government has been working with various stakeholders in South Sudan on issues to do with federalism. She says Switzerland has a wealth of experiences in matters to do with federal system of governance.
For about a year now, we've also been working jointly with the Ministry of Federal Affairs and with a partner in Addis called IDEA to try and raise awareness around what federalism really is, create understanding of what federalism is, and work with South Sudanese members of parliament from opposition in government on what type of federalism could suit South Sudan.
Holger says the sustainability of Swiss projects in South Sudan depends on involvement of various South Sudanese stakeholders. She says her office does not control South Sudanese organizations receiving support from the Swiss government.
We work with civil society organizations based in Juba, but that are active at the grassroots. We work with the South Sudan Council of Churches. We work with the customary authorities now with Rift Valley Institute. So we work through partners with financial support, but also technical support.
Holger says her government is ready to work with South Sudanese in areas where intervention is needed.
We also see the need to reinforce unity in South Sudan. South Sudan is a very diverse country, just like Switzerland, who is a small country with 26 states and 4 national languages. So Switzerland has quite a lot of expertise of how to live united with a lot of diversity. So this is an area where we see that Switzerland can bring support and where support might be needed.
The Swiss diplomat says her country has invested millions of dollars in projects aimed at fostering unity among South Sudanese. She says the Swiss government is also supporting the South Sudan Council of Churches to reconcile communities in Jonglei State. Still in Jonglei State, health officials in the state capital Bor say 11 patients have escaped from a treatment center in Bor. The officials say the patients have switched off their phones and health officials are having difficulties tracing them. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Dr. Samuel Majur, the Director General in the Jonglei State Health Ministry, says after the 11 individuals tested positive, they were all directed to stay at the isolation center where they could be treated. In a state, they sneaked out one by one the same day they were tested and switched off their phones, says Majur. He says COVID-19 patients often try to avoid isolation centers because of the stigma attached to the pandemic, which he says is dangerous for the rest of the community.
I'm appealing to these people who are tested positive and then they are back there to the community. If you see, if you are tested positive, it is good if you need to follow up the instruction of the doctors. So you come back so that you can be tested, and then from that, if you are free, then you can just go back to the community free of COVID-19. Because we don't want to see people again infecting others.
Jonglei State Police spokesman Majak Daniel Tuor says doctors at the hospital have yet to request police assistance in tracing down the individuals who escaped their quarantine center.
Until up to this evening, I doubt whether they have reported, because the duty for them to avail the police authority with the detailed numbers and their whereabouts and circuit, so that the police can help them in the search.
Dr. Majur says all 11 switched off their phones before leaving the center, making them harder to trace. The rate at which the virus is spread multiplies when someone who tested positive refuses to self-isolate or be admitted for treatment, according to Dr. Majur. He says people with weak immune systems, such as the elderly, are especially vulnerable. Dr. Ajak Garang, manager of the Coronavirus Isolation Center in Bor, says a lack of cooperation by people who test positive poses a great challenge to health workers trying to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
They are always quarreling with the screeners, so they are not comfortable with the screening. Some of them, they think it is not true. COVID-19 is a propaganda where people are looking for money. But this is not the case. Unless those people who saw people dying in the medical ward when I was treating them and they died, these are the people who have accepted. But the rest, they think this one is not true. But there are those confirmed.
27-year-old Bor resident Jacob Nial says he worries that many people in the community do not observe preventive guidelines. He also criticized local doctors for putting people's lives at risk by allowing confirmed cases to self-quarantine.
When a person is found positive with COVID-19, he's supposed to be confined, supposed to be quarantined for 14 days in the center, and that is why the center was constructed. It is meant for COVID-19 patients. It's not supposed to be left to go and live at home. What about the family, and what about everyone? So everyone's life now is at danger.
Dr. Garang says there are not enough structures to isolate all coronavirus patients.
If we were to say we are going to bring anybody in the isolation center, we don't have enough beds, we don't have enough rooms. We may even isolate the whole of our town. Actually, if we go now and screen everyone, majority of people are affected, only that they have not come for testing.
Dr. Garang says the main problem is that people who test positive ignore the disease, which greatly increases the risk of dying or spreading the virus to others. There are 78 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Jonglei alone, including 7 deaths. Overall, South Sudanese officials have confirmed 2,649 cases with 143 recoveries and 49 deaths. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we have some good news for football fans in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
This quote I just added from church. The father was like, "For those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future."
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it stuck since then.
Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. The Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan will present its oral update followed by a country report today. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report presents a deeply disturbing picture of a country mired in crooked schemes aimed at enriching the political elite at the expense of millions of impoverished people who are bearing the scars of years of conflict and abuse. Commission Chair Yasmin Suka says South Sudan is a country where lives are being destroyed by financial corruption on an epic scale. She says looting and pillage are not just offshoots of war. They are the main drivers of the conflict.
At one end of the spectrum, South Sudan's political elites are fighting for control of the country's oil and mineral resources, in the process stealing their people's future. At the other, the soldiers in this conflict over resources are offered the chance to abduct and rape women in lieu of their salaries.
Suka says the commission has uncovered brazen embezzlement by senior politicians and the government. She says they have misappropriated a staggering $36 million since 2016. She says the number of international corporations and multinational banks have aided and abetted in these crimes. The report documents widespread human rights violations and internecine situations that are tearing communities apart and fueling ethnic and religious hatred. All this, it says, is depressing efforts to truly establish a peaceful government of unity. The commission says the establishment of the hybrid court, composed of judges and prosecutors from South Sudan and across Africa, is the only way to end the country's crisis. South Sudan's Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs, Ruben Mado Arol, acknowledges his country's checkered human rights record. However, he says his government does not condone any form of violence, and human rights violations committed against civilians have reduced significantly. He says his government has established an economic management committee to address the country's difficult economic situation.
The committee is tasked to streamline the collection of non-oil revenues and monitor all financial transactions for transparency and accountability. With this, we are sure that it will produce good outcomes that will enable the government to focus on developmental projects.
The Justice Minister says the government is committed to the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. He appeals to the international community to provide the necessary support to enable his country to realize this. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
World leaders began taking part in the 75th annual UN General Assembly high-level debate. Heads of states from around the world sent videos instead of physically gathering at the United Nations in New York due to the coronavirus pandemic. International Edition's Steve Miller spoke to VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashar for a recap of the day.
So the UN General Assembly annual debate got underway on Tuesday, and we heard from some of the world's major powers. We heard from the United States, from Russia, from China, from France. Four of the five permanent members of the Security Council, all represented by their presidents. This year, the Assembly is by video message because of the COVID pandemic, and the pandemic was certainly foremost in those leaders' minds. And we saw a lot of talk about how to contain the virus, but also there was a big focus on the race for the vaccine. And President Trump said he feels there's a vaccine coming very soon in the United States. President Xi Jinping of China said that they have several COVID-19 vaccines vaccines in active phase 3 clinical trials in their country. And President Putin touted the fact that Russia was the first country to register a vaccine against COVID in August. And he said that he would like to offer it to the United Nations so they could vaccinate their staff who are out in the field helping people. But I think it's important to note that international medical experts have been a bit skeptical about the Russian vaccine because it was approved when it hadn't even started these advanced phase 3 trials yet. So there's some question as to whether it's effective or safe. But this was very much on the top of the agenda of the major powers today at the UN.
Speaking of COVID-19, President Trump really has laid out his case that China is responsible for the worldwide pandemic. And, you know, we have heard some of the response from the UN ambassador from China saying that they reject that assertion. But since this is the General Assembly and everyone is sharing their thoughts, where does the world fall on that spectrum?
Well, I think the United States is certainly more vocal in pointing the finger at China, but we have heard it from some European leaders, but the rest of the world is a little more quiet about it. They don't, you know, some countries, some poorer developing countries can't afford to aggravate either the United States or China because, they have dependent relationships with these two powers. So, but there was definitely, it was interesting because the messages were pre-taped. You know, when you have a live debate, a leader could hear the speech of his rival, perhaps, and tweak his own speech before he comes out to respond to what he said. So in this instance, it was video messages, and each ambassador of each respective country introduces his president or prime minister's speech. So President Trump had spoken second this morning, and then the Chinese president spoke fourth, and his ambassador took it upon himself to dismiss President Trump's attack on Beijing. He didn't like it, and he said so. And he did bring it up in his own speech, his recorded speech, and he denounced efforts to politicize or stigmatize the virus.
You know, one question I do have for you is, you know, the United Nations General Assembly is an opportunity for all these world leaders to meet and do some diplomacy in the hallway, so to speak, of the UN building there. This is a virtual assembly, as you've said, and they aren't able to do that. Are they making any kind of allowances to hold private video conferencing to have that kind of similar interactivity that they are missing this year?
No, and unfortunately, that's a really, really important aspect of the UN General Assembly, this idea where you can meet a president or prime minister on the sideline of some other meeting, let's say about COVID, and speak to each other about some other pressing issue. And for new leaders, you know, newly minted leaders, it's a very big deal to come to your first UN General Assembly because you are introduced onto the international stage and you meet your peers. So that is very much lost this year, and that loss is very much felt.
South Sudan's national football team, the Bright Stars, has resumed training in preparation for the African Cup of Nations qualifiers game with Uganda's Crane. The coach of the South Sudan's national team says the training aims to keep players fit. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Stay in your zone. Let's play.
Bright Stars head coach Cameroonian national Cyprian Asu runs players threw a drill at Juba's Bullock football ground on Saturday. 32 South Sudanese players are taking part in 2 weeks of internship training that began last week. All team players and managers took a mandatory COVID-19 test before training got underway and tested negative. As the team prepares for a possible first ever African Cup of Nations qualifier game in 2022, Coach Asu says players are laser focused on improving their skills.
We try to come up with a training plan that will give that player every little aspect of that game.
Sure.
So the fitness, the technical part, the understanding of the game, how we want to play. We try it in every session to get something out of it.
Asu says the training concentrates on ball coordination, agility, technical work, and finishing.
Some of the players have been 4 months without even a proper game. So there are so many things we have to put to get that player back where they were before the shutdown. Because I remember before sporting activities was being stopped, we were in camp. Yeah, we were encamped and we even trained that day, and we were supposed to play a friendly game before everything was stopped. So it will be a little bit long time. It will take a few weeks for players to regain.
Each day, players spent 2 hours training on the football pitch in the morning, work out in the gym in the afternoon, and then return to the pitch for more training. 26 years, Peter Makermanyang is captain. He says Juba's intense heat is a major challenge during the Bright Stars training.
We haven't not been training so far, but it's good that we kept our shape in when we were in the lockdown. Some of us have been doing individual trainings that have kept us up, but we are coping up now with the training currently.
The last time the Bright Stars trained as a team was in March, just before the government suspended all sports activities. Asu says both players and managers are following COVID-19 preventive measures.
We train every training session to try to emphasize on them being very cautious, or because some they live at home and they have to avoid crowds. They have to try to implement the simple hygiene rules, like washing hands, sanitizers, and all that. But I think for now we're coping with it. We thank God for that, because they all look healthy.
The Bright Stars are scheduled to play 2 friendly matches with Cameroon in October ahead of the AFCON qualifiers game with the Group B leaders Uganda's Cranes in November. The Continental Football Governing Body, or CAF, confirmed in an emergency meeting in Cairo, Egypt last month that the African Cup of Nations doubleheader game between South Sudan and Uganda will be played between November 9th and the 17th in Cameroon. South Sudan and Uganda were supposed to face off in a doubleheader match in March, but the games were postponed due to the pandemic. South Sudan is at the bottom of Group B with 0 points. Uganda tops the group with 4 points. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Roda by Eddie Kenzo and Awilo Longomba.
Shake it up, shake it up, shake it up.
Listening to Eddie Kenzo and Awilo Longomba with the song Roda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yeah, no way for tomorrow. Oh, that you're my mommy, oh.